The celebrations of pro-European parties and activists, reflecting on their successful ouster of Ukraine's elected president, Viktor Yanukovych, were cut short when it was reported that Russian troops had been deployed to the nation's Crimean Peninsula on February 28th. An unknown number of soldiers said to be Russian, wearing uniforms without insignia, surrounded Ukrainian military bases in the Crimean parliament. Simultaneously, pro-Russian Ukrainian groups organized protests in the country's majority ethnic Russian cities in the east and south, expressing opposition to the de facto government that took power in Kiev after 3 months of an often bloody occupation that cost more than 85 lives. While the Obama administration and its European Union allies threatened Russia with economic sanctions and a boycott of the upcoming Group of Eight economic summit in Sochi this summer, President Putin told Russian media in Moscow on March 4th that the soldiers in Crimea are not Russian, calling them local forces of self-defense. He branded the overthrow of Ukraine's government as an unconstitutional coup and said he hopes that Russia won't need to use force to protect the people of predominantly Russian-speaking eastern Ukraine. Earlier, the Kremlin announced that tens of thousands of Russian troops that had been participating in military exercises near Ukraine's border had been ordered back to their bases. At the same time, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, meeting with officials in Kiev, announced $1 billion in American loan guarantees to assist the interim Ukrainian government. Your reporter spoke with David Kotz, professor of economics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, who assesses the possible consequences of Russia's intervention in Crimea, the U.S.-European response, and strategies for reducing tensions.
The Russian reaction was entirely predictable. I think you have to ask, who made a mistake that led to this disastrous situation? And I'm afraid that has to be laid at the doorstep of the United States and the European Union, both of which encouraged what developed into an armed uprising against the elected president of Ukraine, despite the fact that the leadership of that uprising on the ground consisted of extreme nationalists who were very hostile to Russia and to Russians. Some of them are descended from a group that during World War II, during the Nazi occupation of the Soviet Union, worked with the Nazi occupiers. One of the first acts of this new parliament after the uprising in Ukraine was to end the official status of the Russian language, which is one of the two official languages of Ukraine, or has been. So once things arrived at that pass, and Russia was now facing a Ukraine that was being pulled from its position, having relations both with the West and Russia, toward being completely taken into the Western alliance, I think it was inevitable that Russia was going to act. I don't think it was some master scheme on the part of Putin. I think it was an inevitable result of having Ukraine pulled in that direction by the West. You know, the EU agreement that Yanukovych had considered signing but then did not sign at the last minute had two key features. One is it included harsh austerity measures that would have been very harmful for the Ukrainian people. But it also had a provision that stated that Ukraine would henceforth follow NATO in military policy. So this meant the major former Soviet state right on the border of Russia was going to be drawn into NATO. It was inevitable that Russia was going to react since it sees NATO as an anti-Russian military force and didn't want to see it extend right to its border in a large state that had always been part of or friendly to Russia.
Professor, what do you think Vladimir Putin's objectives are in sending troops to the Ukraine are? Is it annexation or pressure to extract concessions from the new Ukrainian government in Kiev?
Nobody is sure. One possibility is that Putin has stated that he favors keeping Ukraine independent in its present borders. Now, maybe he's changed his mind. But one possibility is that by taking control of Crimea, which is overwhelmingly ethnic Russian, it may be that he is trying to press the new government in Kiev to negotiate and to break its ties with the extreme right-wing nationalists. The new government is not made up of these right-wing nationalists, but they played a leading role in the armed uprising, and they have a lot of soft influence. I assume that's why the parliament passed this very harmful anti-Russian language law. So perhaps Putin thinks once the new leaders realize that their actions are threatening the survival of the Ukraine state, that they will think twice and make it clear that they will respect the rights of ethnic Russians in eastern Ukraine and in Crimea. That's one possibility.
Professor Kautz, when you look at the U.S. and European response to the Russian troops being deployed in Crimea, what do you make of the threats of economic sanctions against Russia, including a boycott of the G8 summit in Sochi this summer, and other things that are being talked about, such as deploying anti-missile systems to Poland and Romania earlier than had previously been agreed to? A lot of saber-rattling is going on right now. Is that productive?
I think it's totally unproductive. I don't know if anyone thinks it will have any impact on what Russia does in this situation. The fate of Ukraine is of central importance to Russian policymakers, and it'd be hard to believe that the threat, kind of threats being made or that might plausibly be made and carried out would change their actions in this. It's embarrassing the way the media have been treating this as a match between two individuals, you know, who will blink first, Obama and Putin. It's being treated as this kind of manhood contest. I think the right policy would be for the Obama administration to open negotiations with Russia to try to arrive at a compromise in which the Ukrainian government would clearly recognize the rights of all the people of Ukraine. I think that, you know, with some kind of guarantees for the rights of ethnic Russians as well as ethnic Ukrainians. I think that's the way to solve the problem, not saber rattling when everyone knows there, you know, no saber's going to be drawn.
That was David Kautz, professor of economics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst and co-author of the book, Russia's Path from Gorbachev to Putin, The Demise of the Soviet System and the New Russia. For more perspectives on the crisis in Ukraine, visit our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.